In the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His mind was troubled, and he could not sleep. So the king summoned the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, and astrologers to tell him what he had dreamed. When they came in and stood before the king, he said to them, "I've had a dream that troubles me, and I want to know what it means." Then the astrologers answered the king, "May the king live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will interpret it." The king replied to the astrologers, "This is what I've firmly decided. If you do not tell me what my dream was and interpret it, I will have you cut into pieces and your houses turned into piles of rubble. But if you tell me the dream and explain it, you will receive from me gifts and rewards and great honor. So tell me the dream and interpret it for me." Once more they replied, "Let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will interpret it." Then the king answered, "I'm certain that you are trying to gain time, because you realize that this is what I've firmly decided. If you do not tell me the dream, there is only one penalty for you. You have conspired to tell me misleading and wicked things, hoping the situation will change. So then, tell me the dream, and I will know that you can interpret it for me." The astrologers answered the king, "There is no one on earth who can do what the king asks. No king, however great and mighty, has ever asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or astrologer. What the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods, and they do not live among humans." This made the king so angry and furious that he ordered the execution of all the wise men of Babylon. So the decree was issued to put the wise men to death, and men were sent to look for Daniel and his friends to put them to death. When Arioch, the commander of the king's guard, had gone out to put to death the wise men of Babylon, Daniel spoke to him with wisdom and tact. He asked the king's officer, "Why did the king issue such a harsh decree?" Arioch then explained the matter to Daniel. At this, Daniel went into the king and asked for time so that he might interpret the dream for him. Then Daniel returned to his house and explained the matter to his friends Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. He urged them to plead for mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that he and his friends might not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon.
Well, good evening, everybody. My name's Tom. I'm another one of the ministers here at St. Matthew's. Do keep that Bible passage open, and we'll have a think about that in a moment. Now, if I was to take you aside and at the end of the service, look you in the eye and say, "Look, how's it going? How's it going? How are you finding living as a Christian? How's it going generally?" What would you say? Now, I suspect for most of us, it would depend on what day you ask us. You know, there are days that are going great. There are days when anything is possible, when all hills can be conquered, everything just falls into place. And that's true of our faith as well, isn't it? Days where we're triumphant believers, awaiting the return of the Lord Jesus. Days when no one could question our faith or devotion. But then there are other days, aren't there? Days that I guess for most of us are most days. Days when it's hard. When you get out of bed and from that moment to the very end of the day, everything goes wrong. You know, put something in the microwave and leave it in there for too long and explodes and covers the microwave in inside of tomato soup or whatever. I don't know. That's a very minor example. But there are days when things go much worse. When life at home is hard, when work is hard, when we've been crushed by bad news, when our hopes are dashed, days when we've fallen into sin, no matter how hard we've tried to resist, days when it's hard to carry on as a believer, when we don't want to go to church, when we don't want to meet with other believers. And if you're here and you wouldn't call yourself a Christian, those days still happen when you trust in Jesus. So when those days come, and they come for each of us, well, what are we to do? When we look at the path ahead of us and we can't see the light at the end of the tunnel that we're often told is there, well, where's our hope for the future? One of the kind of classic ways we deal with this in the UK is, you know, you express this frustration to someone and they say, well, chin up. You know, just keep going. Things will get better in the end. But we know that sometimes life just isn't like that. That actually life is hard and it stays hard. But that's where we need to hear the book of Daniel. That's where Daniel 2 really has realistic hope for the future. For people who really need to hear it. They needed to hear it then, we need to hear it now. And particularly because the world of Daniel and his friends, well, it's come crashing down. They were believers in their own country who were conquered, defeated, and led away into exile. That's bad enough. But particularly when it's tied up to the promises that God had made to them. God who'd said, you will be my chosen people. This will be your land that I am giving to you. And it's all gone. God's promises look squashed in the dirt. God looks weak as his people are far away from home with no way out. But Daniel chapter 2 gives us hope. Hope for the future. That's why that's the title for this evening. Even when things look hard. And wonderfully, it's not... There's hope for the future, not because we just need to try a bit harder or develop some new abilities to make it easier. No, we can have hope for the future, not because of us, but because of who God is and what he will do. It's not about us. And that's the surprising thing about this chapter, as we read through it. There's lots of powerful and influential people in this story. There's kings, court advisors, men running around with swords trying to chop people's heads off. There's a great hero of the Bible as well, a great hero of the Christian faith. But the irony is that they are actually powerless. God is shown to be the great God, the one who not only knows all things, but is in control of all things too. And actually, we have even more reason for hope in the future than Daniel did. He just received God's word that things would change for the better, certain because God had promised it. We've seen Jesus come to earth. We've seen his victory over sin and death as he died on the cross. We've seen his kingdom established at his resurrection so that we can know that God's promises are certain. That things will get better, not because of us, but because of what Jesus has already done. We all need hope for the future, and this passage shows us why, with God, that's realistic, not just nice words to say. And so Daniel 2 breaks into two kind of big sections, and the first one is really very simple. It's this: God can reveal mysteries. God can reveal mysteries. Look at Daniel 2, verse 1 with me. Let's start with the mystery. In the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His mind was troubled and he could not sleep. So the king summoned the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, and astrologers to tell him what he had dreamed. When they came in and stood before the king, he said to them, "I've had dreams that trouble me, and I want to know what it means." Now, the king of Babylon is the ruler of the greatest empire of the day. But like you and like I, he's troubled by his dreams. It's a nightmare. And like today, lots of people believe that dreams had meanings. But the difference is, for us, we think our dreams help us to understand, you know, it's part of us processing the day, or it's reflecting on some incident in the past. Look, you know, our dreams sort of look backwards. Back then, dreams, particularly the dreams of the king, well, they often look forwards. They're often messages from the gods showing the future. They've got the power to guide and advise on what to do. But Nebuchadnezzar's got a problem. He's got a dream that is advising him on the way to go, power for the future, but he's no idea what it means. He's clueless. And what Nebuchadnezzar faces is actually something that we all face. It's this, that there are things that we can't understand. So Nebuchadnezzar does what all self-respecting kings of the ancient world do. So he summons all his wise men for guidance, those who study the stars or listen to their gods for knowledge. But Nebuchadnezzar's got a twist for them. Look at verse 5. He wants to know what his dream means, but in order to separate those who really know what they're talking through from those who have just got kind of fine and flashy words, well, he's not going to tell them what the dream is. This is the kind of bar of entry to get in. I think it's a really great move. You know, if these guys are really wise or really have a God speaking to them, well, let them show it. And he gives the standard ancient world incentive scheme as well, which is succeed and I'll reward you greatly. Fail, I will cut you into tiny pieces and bury you in your own house. Nothing focuses the mind quite like that. They understandably are somewhat taken aback by this, and you know, there's a sort of backwards and forwards, back and forth, until we get to verse 10. Because this is where it lands, isn't it? The astrologers answered the king, "There is no one on earth who can do what the king asks. No king, however great and mighty, has ever asked such a thing of any magician, enchanter, or astrologer. What the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal to the king, no one can reveal it to the king except the gods, and they do not live among humans." I have a certain amount of sympathy with these wise men. They've hit a problem that we all face. There is a limit to what we know. You know, if I said to you, "Guess what I'm thinking?" Well, it's impossible, isn't it? We can't see inside someone's head. And the thing is, even if we could see what's inside someone's head right now, we couldn't guess what they're going to think about then, next. There are things we just can't understand. We need a power beyond what humanity is capable of. And this is the problem of humanity. We're weak. And actually, there's nothing we can do about it. You know, but again, picture that scene. You've got the king sat on his throne with his all-powerful, all-conquering armies. You've got the wise men representing all of the knowledge of the ancient worlds. All the money that they could wish for. But no amount of any of those things can make people understand. But when confronted with his own frailty, rather than sulking or despairing, as you or I might do, well, the king orders all the wise men to be put to death. And this is a problem on many levels, but it's particularly a problem for Daniel and his friends. Because as we saw last week, they were men of great, they've been blessed by God with great learning and great wisdom. And they're among the wise men of Babylon as a result. Now Daniel sort of comes across Arioch, the commander of the king's guard, who's gone out to put all the people to death and get some time. Just has a few moments given to him in the king's kindness. So what are you going to do in that moment? Well, Daniel, there's only one thing that he can do. He goes home, verse 18. Daniel urged his friends to plead for mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that he and his friends might not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. They plead for mercy. Simply put, they pray. They pray to the God of heaven. Because actually, those astrologers were right, weren't they? No ordinary mortal can understand. And they say, well, our God is different. Our God is different. He is the one who knows. And the shock of these verses, verse 19, during the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. There are things we can't understand. But God can reveal all hidden things. He can reveal all hidden things. God can reveal the dream because God knows all things. Again, look at verse 20. Daniel praised the God of heaven and said, "Praise be to the name of God forever and ever. Wisdom and power are his. He changes times and seasons. He deposes kings and raises others up. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the discerning. He reveals the deep and hidden things. He knows what lies in darkness, and light dwells with him." Now, God knows all things because, as verse 20 says, wisdom and power belong to him. You know, the very essence of wisdom, of understanding, well, they're his. He is the one who defines all things. God doesn't learn things. We get them from God. And because he knows, he is the only one who can reveal the deep and hidden things, as verse 22 says. He's like a torch shining in a dark room, bringing light to what's hidden. And he can do that because he's so much greater than you and I. It's not that God knows more than each of us, like some world-leading academic knows far more about quantum physics than I do. It's of a completely different order of knowledge. He gives out wisdom and knowledge because they're his possessions. He doesn't discover things, he just knows them. He even knows the thoughts inside our heads. And the wonder of this story is that actually, in contrast to what the astrologers were saying, oh, yeah, verse 11, no one can reveal it to gods, reveal it to the king except the gods, and they don't live among humans. Well, God has chosen to speak to us. He chose to speak to Daniel. He chose to speak through all of the Bible. He even came down to earth in Jesus so that we can see what God is like. We can know his character, not just words, but what God is like, what he cares about. God reveals all hidden things because he knows them, and he chooses to share them. But the even more remarkable thing is that he even reveals the future. So Daniel wakes up, goes back to Arioch, goes to the king, and if you just turn over the page, top of the next page, verse 28. Daniel says, "There is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. He has shown King Nebuchadnezzar what will happen in days to come. Your dream and the visions that passed through your mind as you were lying in bed are these. As your majesty was lying there, your mind turned to the things to come, and the revealer of mysteries, God himself, showed you what is going to happen." Just realize what's the Bible saying here. What Daniel is saying about the Lord God. He doesn't just know now, he knows the future. And that's shocking, isn't it? We'll think a bit more about that in a minute and quite what that means. But Daniel explains in verse 30 that it's not because he's brilliant in some way, but because God is the one who knows all things. He knows the future. And so Daniel tells Nebuchadnezzar his dream. You see that starting in verse 31. It's all about a statue. A statue. It looks like this. It's a statue made up of four parts. So verse 32. The head of the statue was made of pure gold. Its chest and arms of silver. Its belly and thighs of bronze. Its legs of iron. Its feet partly of baked partly of iron, partly of baked clay. But as Nebuchadnezzar's looking at this amazing statue, it gets completely obliterated by a rock, smashed into 1,000 pieces. Then the iron, verse 35, then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were all broken into pieces, and became like chaff on a threshing floor in the summer. Pieces of dust that when the wind blows through, it just goes. Smashed by this rock, cut, but not by human hands. And hold on to that thought, because we'll come back to that in a minute. And this rock that's obliterated, it grows up into a mountain that fills the whole earth. Now we'll think about what it means in a minute, but I just wanted to dwell on this for the moment. God has done something no ordinary person could do. He's put a dream in Nebuchadnezzar's head and then revealed the same dream in Daniel's head on a different night. He is powerful and he knows all things. And I wonder, who do you know who knows the most? I guess we'll all have someone, whether we feel confident in our kind of knowledge or less confidence. You know, maybe it would be someone you want on a pub quiz team, someone with exceptional general knowledge. Maybe it's some person you know who is a sort of world leader in their fields. We'll all have someone we look up to. For me, the person I'm thinking of was a guy who was a great lawyer, a great theologian, who once said he was so bored in a lecture that at the end of it came out saying, well, the only way I've been able to cope with the boredom was by translating the next lecture notes first into Latin and then into Greek. I don't, just people have that sort of cleverness, I don't know. But whoever we're thinking of, there's a limit to their knowledge. They may well be a world-leading expert in whatever, but they won't know about something else. Or they'll find the ordinary things of everyday life, like making a shopping list, extremely difficult. Whoever we're thinking of, there is a limit to their knowledge. They can know stuff all about celebrities or science or whatever it is, but they don't know the thoughts inside our heads. They don't know the dreams that keep us up at night, not unless we tell them first. There's a limit to their knowledge. And if they can't know, how much less can we? How much less do we? And it's not nice to acknowledge our weakness, our limitations, but it's vital that we do. Because the world around us tells us that if we just believe in ourselves enough, we'll be able to figure it out. And the reality is that we can't. We'll come up against something that we just can't know. We just can't figure out. And that sounds really pessimistic. But I want to argue that it's liberating. Because it's no longer about me. It's no longer about my efforts, my successes, and particularly my failures at trying to understand what lies in front of me. It's not about me, but there is someone who can truly help. Someone who can understand us and the future. And that's why we need God. We need to come to him for all the things, because he's the one who can reveal the mystery. He can help us understand our hearts, our minds, our situations, the way to live, even the mysteries of the future too, as we'll think about in a minute. And this is really good news, because it means there's a clear way for us to go. There is someone who knows the right path. And it's also good news because it means that nothing that happens to us is a surprise to God, because he knows everything. Nothing sort of catches him out. No decision we make or situation we find ourselves in leaves him thinking, oh no, if only I'd thought of that. No. He knows all things. And because God knows, we can trust him. And when we come to him, we know that we're going to get the right answer. We're going to get the best way to live, the wisdom we most need. God reveals mysteries. And he does that because he's in control. And that's what the second section of this passage shows us. Look at verse 36. Daniel says, "This was the dream, and now we will interpret it to the king." is not just the dream, it's what it means. Let's come back to the image of the statue. Because over the next few verses, Daniel explains what the statue means. It's a story of the future, and it's about kingdoms rising and kingdoms falling. The head of gold, as you see in verse 37, well, it's Nebuchadnezzar. You, Your Majesty, you are the King of Kings. He is the King of the gold head. He's the first kingdom. He rules over all things as God has given it to him. But his kingdom won't last forever. After that will come a second kingdom, an inferior one, a silver kingdom. After that, a bronze kingdom. It's going to be wide-ranging, that will rule over the whole earth. But that kingdom won't last either. There'll be a fourth kingdom, a kingdom of iron that breaks and smashes things to pieces. But the irony is that this fourth kingdom, the toes of clay and iron, well, they're brittle and they break. Iron and clay don't mix. And I guess many of us may be wondering, well, what does this mean? Who are these kingdoms? Who does it refer to? And if you've been around churches for a while, you may have heard different people explaining it in different ways. Some say it's the four succeeding kings of Babylon, as a sort of dynasty that lasted more or less over four kings. So you've got Nebuchadnezzar as the great king, then you've got Amel-Marduk, then you've got Nerigleser and Nabonidus, and yes, I did have to practice saying those names. Some say it's those four kings. For others, they say, well, it's not individual kings, but it's the great dynasties, the great powers that rise and fall in this part of the ancient world. So you've got the Babylonian dynasty, then you've got the Medo-Persian dynasty that comes afterwards, then the Greek Empire, Alexander the Great and his successors, the Seleucids, and then finally the Roman Empire as the fourth one. And there are other options too. There are even variations on those options that I've just given you. But to my mind, I'm not actually persuaded by any of them. And I appreciate this may sound a bit like sort of taking a punt on, you know, just kind of ignoring the question. But I think I'm not persuaded by any of those options because to my mind, they miss the points that God is making through this dream. Look at verse 44 with me, because I think this is the key. Because it's not so much about the kingdom, it's about the rock. Verse 44, in the time of those kings, the king of heaven will set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed, nor will it be left to another people. It will crush all those kingdoms and bring them to an end. But it will itself endure forever. This is the meaning of the vision of the rock cut out of the mountain, but not by human hands. A rock that broke the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold to pieces. Actually, it's not so much a vision of the statue, it's a vision of the rock. Notice Daniel doesn't give specifics on who is coming and when. The thing he focuses on is that in time, God will set up a kingdom that will destroy all the others. He is the one cutting the rock and establishing it as a mountain that fills the whole earth. Now, however impressive or powerful or intimidating each of those kingdoms are, one day God will establish a new kingdom that will replace them all. And he'll smash all of those other kingdoms into a tiny million tiny pieces so that his own will last forever. It will never be destroyed. It will never end. And it will never be given to anyone else. Daniel says this is the future. The great God has shown the king what will take place in the future. This is where the world is going. However strong some circumstance or situation looks like, the end result will be that God's kingdom will come. That's what we need to hold on to. Because knowing whether Daniel is referring to King Nerigleser's reign or the Roman Empire isn't the thing that will help us. It's knowing that God is bringing in a kingdom that will last forever. Regardless of whatever situation we're facing. And this is why we can have hope for the future. To those exiles in Babylon who felt abandoned and confused, unsure of the way the world was going, God speaks to them. They're not abandoned, they're not forgotten, they are still loved. And so that they're absolutely clear that God is still for them, the God of the universe speaks through the very mouth of the king who's conquered them. That is not just a power displayed, it's a power with a message of hope. Their situation won't last forever. It's a message saying a kingdom is coming. Do not give up. I am in control. Now, I don't know if you saw any of the pictures of the runners from the London Marathon the last week. And you see them running down the some of the famous bits of London, and you notice the runners and the barriers on the sideline, the crowds cheering. But in lots of the pictures in the background, you'll see the mile markers saying how far it is to go. You know, we get why they want the kind of the cheering crowds on the sideline, but actually the mile markers are pretty key too, because the runners need to know how to pace themselves. They don't want to go too fast or too slow, because either way they'll never make it to the end. And as the mile markers tick down, well, they know that the end is approaching. It helps them to keep putting one foot in front of the other. And passages like this are the same for us as Christians. They're a reminder. They help us to understand God's plan for the future, to help us keep going when life is hard. It's saying, look, the kingdoms rise and fall, but my kingdom is coming, God is saying. And the wonderful thing is that we have even more reason to keep going than Daniel and the exiles did. God had promised them a kingdom that would come. And we live the other side of the establishment of that kingdom. Jesus has risen from the grave. Sin and death are defeated. His kingdom will come. He has already ascended to the throne of heaven. We're just waiting for him to return. And even while we wait, God has given us the Holy Spirit to equip us and enable us to live the life that we're supposed to, helping us to put sin to death, to give us hope for the future, to fix our minds on what's coming. So don't give up. Sure, there'll be ups and downs. There'll be good days and bad days. There may even be good years, decades. There may even be bad years and decades. But the end result is sure. One day a kingdom will come that will fill the whole earth. And that's our hope for the future. Whether things are going well or badly, the world is only going in one direction, towards the reign of Jesus the King. And when we hear him speak through the Bible, we're listening to the voice of the one who really, truly knows where the world is going. Now, I don't really know how things are going for many of you at the moment. I don't know whether this is a good spell or a hard season, but I do know that you and I can have hope for the future, not because things will magically just get better by themselves, but because of who God is and what he will do. We have a secure hope for the future, however bad things may seem, and a clear plan for how we should live as we look ahead, because God has spoken to us. He's promised us a better world with a better hope. So let's not lose heart, but press on to the end.